Well, thank you for that warm introduction. My first National Federation of the Blind convention was 1975. So I think that's a pretty long time even for this organization. But when I was 22, I used to visit my grandfather every week. So he was then 82, and I asked him, what's it like being 82? And he said, it's actually a lot like being 22. In fact, he doesn't really notice any difference. He still thinks of himself as 22, except for one thing, which he is prone to reminiscing about the past more and more. And as a 22-year-old, I really didn't spend much time doing that. So that was 40 years ago. I'm now 62. And I do spend some time reminiscing, and I'd like to do a little bit of that with you. A few years later, so we're now in late 73, four things happened to me. It's kind of the beginning of this period of my life. They didn't just happen, because they're still happening, all four things. And they all, in fact, have worked together to reinforce each other. So the first one is I met my future wife, Sonia, and we got married a year and a half later, 1975, so we're coming up on our 35th wedding anniversary. I was wondering if that would get an applause. Nowadays, that's considered an accomplishment, but I've always thought the first 50 years is the easiest. I think it's the second half century that's supposed to be challenging. But I've collaborated with my wife on the other three projects and relationships I'd like to talk about. The second one, as Dr. Maurer alluded, I started my first company, Kurzweil Computer Products. We invented a gadget you may have heard of, the Kurzweil Reading Machine. It was an example, actually, of how technology for a disabled population then actually goes on to revolutionize every aspect of information technology. That was true of the telephone, because the Kurzweil Reading Machine actually was the first flatbed scanner. It was the first workable character recognition, the first speech synthesis, and these have gone on to be important technologies in the information revolution. And I've stayed involved with different versions of print-to-speech reading machines for the past 35 years. Around the same time, actually it was around mid-75, I met the National Federation of the Blind. And it became really quite different than I expected, because I was making the rounds of the usual suspects and just meeting the organizations that are in the field. And I so wandered on near DuPont Circle and met Mr. Gashel, who's nobody ever seems to change in this organization. So he became very excited about this project, and he wanted to introduce me and the project to the leader of this organization, Dr. Jernigan. I could tell from the way he spoke about Dr. Jernigan that this was not just another leader. And when I did meet Dr. Jernigan and had the really privilege of developing a relationship with him, I realized that I had an opportunity to meet one of the great civil rights leaders in the world. Someone like Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela, who really set an agenda, not just for the one group that he represented, but for equal rights for all human beings. And I do treasure that relationship. But the organization that I developed a relationship with played a key role. We collaborated very closely. This has really become a whole philosophy of mine in terms of how you go inventing something, which is really, let the users of the technology invent it, because they're going to have the motivation and they're going to have the deep understanding. And it's not just a matter, in this case, of involving a few blind people to do beta testing. It really was critical that we involve the organized blind because of the institutional memory and knowledge of technology at a very deep level and what really works over time and what is required for success. And the reason that the Kurzweil reading machine and the different versions of it over the decades have done as well as they can is entirely due to this very close collaboration. And we worked with 7 blind engineers from this organization. The chief engineer was Mike Hinkson. He might be in the audience. I saw him earlier. And of course, he went on to inspire the world on September 11th, 2001, with his leadership skills, which he had shown much earlier in his work with us on the Kurzweil reading machine. And I'm pleased to say we're working with him again on the latest reader. So that's 3 of the 4. The fourth is I made a discovery, which I call the law of accelerating returns, and that'll take a bit of explanation. But I fashioned myself an inventor since I was age 5. I remember other kids were wondering what they're gonna do, and I always had this conceit, I know what I'm gonna do. And this was at age 6 and 7, and I've kind of stuck with that. At least I'll try it for a century, and then we'll see how it goes. But I quickly realized that the key to being successful, at least one of the keys, is timing, and that most inventors fail because they get the timing wrong. We do some early stage investing now and mentoring. We get a lot of business plans and technology plans. And I would say virtually every one of those groups would do exactly what they say in terms of getting a gadget to work if given the resources. And almost all those gadgets would fail in the marketplace because the timing would be wrong. And also because they would fail to actually consider who's going to use it and to really work with the intended users, which is where the relationship with the National Federation of the Blind comes in again. But realizing the importance of timing, I thought, well, maybe I could make some predictions as to where technology would be. Because it takes years to develop a technology. You got to make the invention make sense for the world that will exist when you finish the project, not when you start the project. And it'll be a very different world. Most of the plans I read, people assume the world 3, 4, 5 years from now is going to be the same as it is today. Mobile computing will be a little bit smaller, but otherwise it's basically the same thing. But think back how different the world was just 3 years ago. People didn't use social networks or wikis or blogs, let alone tweets. I mean, the world was very different. A decade ago, most people didn't use search engines. That sounds like ancient history. The world has really changes very quickly. And the common wisdom, of course, is you can't predict the future. And so I did not expect to find anything that would be very predictable. But I thought maybe if you studied enough, I could make some educated guesses that might be right, you know, more than they would be wrong. I actually made a very surprising discovery. If you measure the basic underlying measures of the power of information technology, like the number of computes you can buy per dollar, or the number of bits of memory per dollar, or the bits of communication per dollar, or the number of base pairs of DNA that you can sequence per dollar, or the number of base pairs of DNA sequenced in a year, or the number of bits we're downloading about the brain in a year. I could mention 100 other measures like that. They follow very predictable trajectories. And what's predictable is that they grow exponentially. Typically, they double every year. That's called exponential growth. And it's very different than linear growth. Linear growth, if I take 30 steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I get to 30. Exponential growth, 2, 4, 8, 16, if I take 30 steps, I get to 1 billion. It makes a huge difference. And it's actually very surprising. It's very unintuitive because our intuition about the future, and this is actually hardwired in our brains, is linear, not exponential. People expect the pace of change to continue at the current pace. They don't think in these exponential terms. This is not an idle speculation about the future. The computer I'm carrying on my belt right now is a billion times more powerful per dollar than the computer I used when I was a student at MIT. It's millions of times more powerful than the computer we had to use when we built the first Kurzweil reading machine. And I don't want to dwell too much on this, but it comes back to the reading machine project. This is now affecting every area of life. It's not just the gadgets we carry around. It's affecting health and medicine, which is now an information technology. It's going to affect energy as we apply information technologies like nanotechnology to solar panel design. So this is getting a little far afield, but the important point is it's ultimately going to transform everything we care about. But what I'd like to focus on for the next few minutes is it's going to transform access to information and reading, because the heart of this phenomena, the law of accelerating returns, is the exponential growth of information. And information, of course, is critical to being a well-informed citizen, to getting an education, to holding a productive job. The blind have actually always been in the leadership in this area because of their need to access information in new ways. They've actually been much more computer savvy and connected than everybody else, and this goes back several decades. So everybody has benefited. The fact that you can buy an iPhone that's twice as good for half the money as 2 years ago is not just because Apple is so clever. We're all taking advantage of this law of accelerating returns. It's not factored into the economic statistics. People talk about the number of dollars of stuff you can buy, with ignoring the fact that, you know, for a dollar you can buy $1 million worth of computation given the capabilities of 10 years ago. So in reading machines, we've gone from a reading machine that's the size of this podium, cost $50,000, could read one type style, no, it read multiple type style, but one language with errors, to where we now have software that can run on a cell phone, reads lots of languages, and has lots of other capabilities, and is far less expensive. And that's going to continue. How best to apply these new resources is something we are continuing to collaborate closely. Jim Gashiel actually works with us now, so we have a very direct, close link to the organized blind to help guide us. The whole strategy in sensory aids for sensory disabilities is to present the information in other modalities. Reading, of course, is one important form of visual information, but there are others. There's software now that can recognize faces. There's actually an iPhone app that will recognize faces using similar technology that is used by Picasso to recognize faces in photographs, and will recognize your friends. I would find that very useful to remind me what their names are. And we have software in-house that can recognize common objects, like a Tylenol bottle. My vision of where reading devices will expand into will really be like a friend that can tell you what's going on in the visual world. Point it in a room and it'll describe what's in the room, who's in the room, how those different visual objects relate to each other. It's a complicated issue, though, as to exactly how to present that information, and that's really where we look forward to working with this group. But we can all really take advantage of the fact that greater and greater hardware power, more and more sophisticated artificial intelligence software will become available, and how best to meet the needs of the blind is something that this organization is an expert on, and so we're very fortunate to have this close collaboration. A major project, which you may be aware of, Dr. Maurer mentioned it in his presidential report, is called BLEO. It's a e-reader, and it's going to be the first fully accessible e-reader, so every aspect of this product and access to books will be completely accessible by the blind, and not just nominally so, but in terms of a system that really will work well and Jim Gashel has been tirelessly testing out and refining and improving every version of that software. So Blio is a free software package. It's going to be actually built into popular computer brands. They'll come with it loaded, but you can also just download it from the web for free. Comes with a million free books. So when you finish those million free books, which are out of copyright, and some of them are good quality contemporary literature that authors have put into the public domain. So there's actually a lot of very good free literature. There'll also be hundreds of thousands of books that you can buy at popular prices. That's actually our business model. This is a joint venture between the National Federation of the Blind and Kurzweil Technologies. We jointly formed this company, KNFB, Reading Technology, to really bring the world of reading at a very affordable price and with all of the capabilities that are needed to provide equal access to this vital information. And we'll be adding more and more capabilities, descriptions of pictures and images, intelligent ways of navigating tables and graphs, and these are some of the items that are in our research. So these three projects have really defined my career, a devotion to access to knowledge, and reading has been the cutting edge of that, and I've stayed involved with reading technology for really going on four decades now. My close and growing deep collaboration and friendship with this organization, which is personally meaningful to me, but has also enabled us to create products that really meet the needs of blind people based on the deep understanding of the National Federation of the Blind of how best to do that. And we have the resources from the law of accelerating returns. Today's difficult trade-off becomes tomorrow's have your cake and eat it too, because these technologies ultimately become incredibly inexpensive and incredibly powerful. I mean, just think of the vast resources that are almost free on the web today, and it's hardly stopping. It's going to pick up speed. And the blind have really been in the leadership all along, and in fact have brought other technologies which other people have benefited from, like flatbed scanning, to the world. Because of their recognition that access to information is the key to success and happiness in the world, both for pleasure and for work and for education. So I look forward to the next 35 years of this close friendship. Thank you.